Welcome back to The Business of Government. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight I'm talking with Kevin Thurm, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. Kevin, let's shift to the management of HHS. As you know, the endowment recently published a report on managing HHS, and we want to ask you a few questions about that. I noticed that you and Secretary Shalala have developed a strategy of avoiding or minimizing traditional bureaucratic and management processes and structures, which strikes us as unusual. Tell us about your approach.
Well, I think it really starts, at the top, which is with the Secretary, and she's managed in large public institutions before, and so has had experience at this. She was at Housing and Urban Development, the Carter Administration, Hunter College is part of the City University of New York, the University of Wisconsin. The first is, about leadership is to set your priorities and be clear about what your priorities are, delegate authority to people in the institution, hire the best people you can, and encourage the people to take responsibility for producing results in their agencies. Insist on inclusion of people who ought to be part of the process. Much of what we do at the department is by its nature cross-cutting. We can say it so, or even if we don't say it so, but to make sure that those who are affected or have interest in the policies or programs are sitting at the table, and hold people accountable for making sure they're there at the beginning and not just at the end, and emphasize the importance of the integration of those efforts for achieving the priorities we've established. And so I think we've been able to do that, delegate responsibility to the agencies, try and get them to work together and collaboratively to produce better results, and then take a look at it after we've been doing that.
How important do you think experience is in these senior leaders in terms of having been there and done that when they take over a large organization?
I think it varies. I think some of it is substantive experience in the area. Some of it is having managed before in like institutions. Some of it is working in a large organization in which you'll be required to work with others. I think there are lots of skills that make people successful, and we've been really quite fortunate to have recruited and had the opportunity to work with really terrific leaders for these agencies and the divisions in the Office of the Secretary.
Well, the report mentions, and you made reference to, collaborative decision-making. Can you tell us how that works in a large and diverse department?
It works in a couple of different ways. The first is we essentially talk about not having surprises. I think it manifests itself in a couple of ways. If you want a policy approved or you want consideration of something, no surprises means with your colleagues, so that if it's a policy or initiative that affects others in the department or agency, they ought to hear about it before the meeting with me or the secretary. Second, if it's something that is just happening in an agency within the department, things happen, and they ought to just let people know in advance so that there's a way of people being prepared for what might occur. And it's to then support often the decision-making that happens in agencies after we've had an opportunity to ask the critical questions about implications for the policy, options that have been considered, how this will affect other priorities on the agency's or the department's agenda.
And how do you know who to collaborate with in such a large department?
Well, I think that it should start with everybody and then work backwards. There needs to be established patterns and practice of expectations so that if you deal with an issue about access to health care, the obvious agency in HHS would be the Healthcare Finance Administration and the Health Resources and Services Administration. But it also needs to go more broadly. The Indian Health Service, to whom we through which we provide direct health care to Native Americans and Alaska Natives in this country, or the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, which focuses on mental health issues and substance abuse issues. So it really needs to be thought broadly and then work backwards, as opposed to start narrowly and then, well, who else needs to be here? And the more we can train ourselves to think broadly, the better the policies tend to be and the consideration, particularly when we do this early on.
And one of the, another thing in the report mentioned was how information is exchanged. And I found this interesting, that the Secretary avoids regularly scheduled meetings, but you actually hold certain meetings. Could you tell us about that?
Well, I think meetings are one device for exchanging information. They're also a device for ensuring that the information has been exchanged. So often we sometimes don't need to have a meeting in order to sign off on a policy or to have some consideration. But if you actually need the voices heard, or there are people who have concerns about a particular aspect of a policy who want to express something, to have the meeting, to have the voices expressed, to do it at a particular time forces people to be prepared for the for whatever is going to occur, to have the questions that they think are going to be asked, to have answers for those questions, to have consulted in advance. And it also sets a deadline for us to move forward, because we also use meetings as a device to do that. And then also, I think on occasion, use meetings as a device to look back at what we were able to do, what we weren't able to do, and to think about and reflect on why that was so and how we can improve on it.
Well, if not in meetings, how else do you get information about what's going on in the department?
Well, there are briefings, paper briefings that come forward. And so you can actually, regulations, for instance, can move forward without a meeting on occasion if there's concurrence throughout the department. So we never would have a meeting, but there would be a piece of paper that we would take a look at and we'd read. I think those are pretty much standard ways of doing that.
Is that different than, say, how the secretary would get information about what's going on?
I think we have a series of established ways of keeping the secretary informed, regular reports on a periodic basis, meetings. I think the secretary has also maintained good relationships with the agency heads with whom she has a direct ongoing relationship. So picking up the phone, having lunch, seeing people before or after meetings. She's very good at maintaining those relationships, seeing what's on the front of folks' agenda. So it doesn't only happen in the context of a formal meeting.
Over the years, there have been many additional titles added to departments, CFOs, CIOs, IGs. Can you tell us about the CFO and the CIO function, which you've assigned to one individual in HHS?
We've combined the chief financial officer, the chief information officer, the chief budget officer into a single person in office in what we call our assistant secretary for management and budget. I think we've benefited by integrating all of those responsibilities in one area. It needs to be have sufficient resources to carry them out, but it assures us, I think more frequently than not, that we'll have an integrated look at the various aspects, management or budget aspects of particular policies or the department's business. In instances where those responsibilities are split, it has the possibility, though not always happening this way, in which the way of thinking about budget decisions are disconnected from the information technology decisions, ways of thinking about the management are disconnected from the financial aspects. We've chosen to integrate them. I think it's been the right decision for us. It's been successful, and we have a very good shop in our office of the Assistant Secretary for Management and Budget, through which all of these responsibilities come up.
What's the downside to this? I mean, can one person do all these jobs?
Well, I think it's in some ways questions of resources. And I think are the deputies, so there's an assistant secretary, but then is the deputy for chief financial officer or the deputy chief information officer, how strong are they and how strong are their staffs and how well do they work together? So you can imagine even within an office, those issues, competition between or among. But to have an integrating place below the deputy secretary in an office of the assistant secretary, I think, works quite well. But I think there could be issues of the conglomeration of all of those authorities, or that we're stretching someone too thinly. Those are the right questions to ask, but I think it's worked successfully for us.
And the department is well known for the good relationship it has between the office of the secretary and the IG. Can you tell us about that relationship and why it's worked?
I think the secretary has had experience working in environments in which there has been an inspector general. And so she appreciated the importance of the role. Second, the secretary recruited a very experienced IG, June Gibbs Brown, who had experience throughout the federal government and an appreciation for the role of the IG in a large federal department. Third, I think they were upfront and frank about how do you get the Office of the Inspector General on the front end to improve program performance and management. And an example that we now cite is something we called Operation Restore Trust, which was a demonstration program led by the Office of the Inspector General, the Healthcare Finance Administration, the Administration on Aging, targeted to reducing fraud and abuse in the Medicare program. We targeted five states and a couple of areas in which we thought spending was going up too rapidly because there was fraud and abuse. And we not only used the IG in this instance to look back at what we had done and to provide a critique, as however positive, but to actually change behavior, which I think we've achieved in the Medicare program. In fact, it's had an impact on the baseline by reducing what we think have been the incidents of fraud and abuse. We've now expanded it to a much broader program in collaboration with the Department of Justice and have worked quite successfully and getting dollars on the mandatory side so that we can maintain the level of activity. It's been a successful collaboration to improve the performance of our programs, not just to look back on what it is we have done and how we can do it better.
Great. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with more of the Business of Government Hour.